T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so. Your number 617-779-7937. Yeah, I was driving in today hearing Mutt and Brad Foe talking a little Red Sox, and I start to get heated up myself, man. It really is tough. I mean, especially now, like watching the postseason, watching the Yankees and watching the Astros, knowing that this Red Sox team had a significantly higher payroll than both these teams, and to see what they put on the field this season, what an absolute disaster. And right now, the biggest thing that irritates me now is you kind of got over the season. Once they were kind of knocked out of playoff positioning, if you will, you kind of thought to yourself, all right, whatever, let's look towards the future. But now it's like you don't know what the future looks like. You have no idea what the plan is because the organization is telling you, oh, we got all these ideas of what we're going to do with the future, and we're going after Theo Epstein and Andrew Friedman and all this. These are all the reports coming out there, and they got nothing yet. They got the same guys that were just working under Dave Dombrowski and one woman, by the way. That's what they have right now. They have basically the same staff without Dave Dombrowski. That's where we're at right now for the Red Sox. We have no idea what this team is going to do in terms of how they approach the winter. Imagine if this team ends up trading Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez leaves in the same offseason. What a tough pill that would be to swallow for the Red Sox. Seriously, what a tough pill that would be to swallow organizationally, because the question now becomes, what do you get back from Mookie Betts? And with J.D. leaving, that would just suck. J.D.'s somebody that I think that has to be the number one priority over Mookie. Like, you have got to keep J.D. in a Red Sox uniform. His swing plays very well at Fenway Park, and we all know that a guy at that position can age well. We just saw one of, if not the greatest DH in the history of the sport, in David Ortiz. We saw the way that he aged, and I look at a guy like J.D. Martinez. This guy is a machine in terms of how he approaches an everyday approach to the plate, so to speak. This guy is unbelievable. He's a machine, and losing that guy would just be catastrophic, especially considering you're only going to have another year of Mookie if you decide to keep him, because he's going to leave in free agency. Guys don't stay when they say they're entering free agency. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Paul in Marshfield. What's up, Paul?
Good evening, Professor Barrett. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Paul?
I have a good answer to why you want to come here to win titles, but I just want to remind you, last time we spoke, I said Kansas City penalizes himself. They get dumped 2 losses at home, and you said, I hope Mahomes doesn't get hurt. Uh-oh, I'm toothless, you're ruthless. What did you do to them, and did we just walk to the Super Bowl since there's no competition?
Well, it looks like the reports, Paul, all the reports coming out in terms of Mahomes is they got the best case scenario in terms of the injury, and apparently they're hopeful that he could be back by the end of the month. So he could be back in a month. Those are the reports. Who knows? I mean, the guy popped his kneecap out of place. They're saying there's no structural damage, but we'll see. Anyway, the Patriots still need some other things to go well, like the offense. They need to get that back on track. It's been ugly, and my suggestion is they need to get Sony Michel involved in the passing game to get the running game going. But overall, I mean, that was a tough thing to watch last night, but we'll see going forward what it means for the Chiefs. But I think Houston's now real competition as well, the way that Watson's playing.
Yeah, it's going to be emergence. I'm glad to hear he's not injured bad. A good thing the trainer went out and popped it right back in.
That I know, that was crazy, I saw these doctors on Twitter last night, Paul, like giving them an applause, basically, because that was, I guess that was big. And I didn't realize this. So apparently, once you pop the knee back into place, now you're still in some pain, but you're in excruciating pain when it pops out. Once you pop back in, like, it relieves a ton of your pain, apparently.
Yes, sir. I did it with my shoulder, just like in that Lethal Weapon movie. They popped it in, and it's instant relief. It's true. So Brian, let me ask you this. You brought up a really good point. We're looking at a situation where we're handcuffed financially to a pitching staff that looks to be cliff diving all in 1 year. It looks bad on Dombrowski, and it just didn't work out. But the thing you bring up is that when you have solid reasons, when they make bad decisions, we don't fall in love with their success and get hand shackled to a downslide or a downturn. And sometimes that happens. And Brian, I've been dying to ask you this. There's a lot of things I hear in politics and you hear behind the scenes that we just don't bring up on the air because there's something called etiquette and class and personal. I bet there's a lot of times when they just have run their course and maybe it's a mutual agreement and it's not as angrily driven as we think. You know, I mean, how do you feel about that as far as what we assume and add and what we put in for what we think is going on and what the actual conversation is? Because I know in politics, it's the difference of night and day.
Yeah, it's a fair question. And Paul, I appreciate the phone call. With the Red Sox, it felt like, from my perspective, that it was more they were upset with the job that Dave Nebrowski did. I don't believe it was personal. They went out there and they hired the guy. And look, I believe some of it may be part of his attitude and how he approaches the workplace every day in terms of he wasn't getting along, or we know the pitching staff, Dana Lavangi, et cetera, he wasn't getting along with the analytical department. So obviously that's not a good thing. But nonetheless, when it comes to Dave Nebrowski, if he made the right moves this offseason, he would still have a job. Remember, this is an ownership group that said before last season that one of the main goals was to basically re-sign Dave Nebrowski, and look at where it got to. And you wonder if Dave Nebrowski upgrades the bullpen, if he doesn't give out one of the Eovaldi or Sale contracts, how differently this could look for Dave Nebrowski. In all likelihood, he still has a job. I don't know how he completely lost his mind. That's what I'm still trying to contemplate. I can justify what happened with Steve Pearce. Fine, you want to bring him back, it's a cheap deal. Whatever, that doesn't make a big deal whatsoever, right? It's not a big deal in terms of the money. But the Nathan Eovaldi thing is the one that I said at the time, I'll still never understand that deal. The guy had one good month, really, like one consistent month with you in the postseason. I get he was great, but that was only like a 22-inning sample size. If you look at the majority of his career, he's had an ERA north of 4, and he's been injured. He's had 3 elbow surgeries heading into this year, and he had another one this year. How could he possibly think that was going to be a good contract long term? The only rationalization I can think is that he thought, okay, we found and we fixed Nathan Eovaldi. So that means we're going to excuse the track record because now he's with us and everything's going to be right going forward. That's the contract to me that essentially got Dave Nebrowski fired. That's the one that sticks out in my mind. Let's get to Seth. He's in Yarmouth. What's up, Seth?
I called to talk about Mookie and JD.
Sure.
I think it's equal right there. You know, I think they both need to be on the team, but obviously you've got to get rid of one, you know?
Yeah, well, here's the question, though, Seth, that I would point back to you with Mookie. We don't know that Mookie wants to be here, right? So if you're just, would you rather just have him for this year and let him walk into free agency and go somewhere else? Do you think he's that important to the 2020 team? Or do you think, all right, organizationally, we'll get a compensatory pick for him if he leaves? Or do I want to see if I can get a couple of minor leaguers and a couple of big leaguers for him?
Well, and then that arises the question, are the Red Sox trying to rebuild? Or...
Well, they're definitely trying to cut some salary, but it's not only just about rebuilding, Seth. It's about this guy's going to be around for 1 year. So even if you have Mookie on the team next year and JD on the team next year, are the Red Sox World Series favorites or anything along those lines? They're not in the same class as a team like the Astros or the Yankees right now because, quite frankly, they don't have anybody that's dependable on their pitching staff outside of Eduardo Rodriguez. That's it right now. We have no idea what Sale's going to be. We have no idea what David Price is going to be. And in all likelihood, Nathan Eovaldi is going to suck. So that's the thing. I look at the Red Sox organizationally, they have to recalibrate where they're at and where their pitching's coming from next year.
I understand that. And honestly, to tell you the truth, I feel like their pitching staff is a lot more important than JD and Mookie. You know, honestly,
so
at
you
that
say,
point,
I think they got to keep JD. I believe they need to keep JD. He's so essential to the middle of that lineup. Because remember this, if you go back, Seth, to a couple of years ago, remember when they lost David Ortiz and it left that big gaping hole in the cleanup spot or wherever they want to hit Ortiz in the lineup? And they really struggled offensively. The next year they get JD and they go back to having that dynamic offense again.
Right.
So my question is, who else is going to be in there? Now, if Mookie and JD are gone, then you just have Devers and Bogarts and a bunch of guys that you're hoping can produce. Benintendi's been unimpressive to me in his career. I thought he was going to be a lot better than he was coming out of Arkansas. 7th overall pick, had a great start to his career, but he never got better. And last year he took a step back. So I just believe that you got to keep at least one of those two guys in the lineup.
Yeah, Mookie or JD. It's one of the two. Honestly, I don't know. I think it's equal. Well, no, because Mookie only has one more year. So I agree with you. You know, I agree that we need to keep JD. But I think that JD is more of a home run hitter than Mookie is.
Yeah, and Seth, here's the thing with Mookie. I don't believe he's going to age well because his game is based on athleticism. I don't see him being a guy that is going to hit home runs to the opposite field. He doesn't do that now. And if you look at a guy like JD Martinez, his stroke is that way. And we know that JD Martinez, we've seen it with DHs in the past, a lot of them age really, really well. And JD Martinez, if you can get him on a contract for the next 3 years, then you feel really, really good about yourself. But the reason that I'm worried about the Red Sox and how they handle this JD Martinez situation is we have no idea what's going on with the front office right now? That's the thing that concerns me. 617-779-7937. Let's get to Blair. He's in Maine. What's up, Blair?
Hey, what's going on? You know, the Yankees are, like, on the verge of tomorrow night. They either win or they don't.
You think they win tomorrow, Blair?
Yeah, I don't know. It's Houston, man. I want Houston to play the Washington Nationals, but yeah. Yankees kind of scary right now. They actually picked it up tonight.
That was
they
gutsy, Blair.
They actually were actually playing like they needed to play before tonight. But tonight they played good. So you just don't know what Yankees are going to bring. So if they bring
their
game tomorrow night, then they got to bring it again because they'll be tied up.
Yeah.
So they got to win one more game than tomorrow night, right? They have to win two games. So they got to bring the A game twice, not just tomorrow night, but another night after tomorrow night.
Right, and Blair, the issue for the Yankees is this. They got Garrett Cole going on the mound tomorrow night for the Astros, so they could be in significant trouble.
It's done. I think the Astros are going to win. If Garrett Cole's on the mound tomorrow night, goodbye, Yankees. Yes, goodbye, Yankees. I hope you're right. I hope the Yankees are finished for the season. Enough of that bullcrap of the Yankees.
Yeah. Hey.
Finally. And enough of the bullcrap for the Jets, because we're going to shut them right down, and we're going to shove it right up the Jets' throat. And it's going to be done because they can't handle our defense.
All right. Hey, Blair, appreciate the call. By the way, if you're interested, Gilroy's back on tomorrow, 3 to 5. So he'll be on tomorrow. I know your buddy's with Gilroy. The number is 617-779-7937. It would be fascinating if the Yankees win this game against Garrett Cole tomorrow night. You beat Verlander and Garrett Cole on back-to-back games. If the Yankees do that, they showed a lot of guts tonight. Quite frankly, I did not see that performance coming from the Yankees tonight, especially considering James Paxton, a guy earlier in the postseason against the Twins, admitted that he was feeling the pressure of the postseason. This guy is completely hit or miss. He comes out that first game that he pitched against the Astros. He only gave them 2 1/3. That's it. And tonight, this guy goes 6 innings, gives up 1 earned run, has 9 strikeouts. He was absolutely phenomenal tonight. Did not see that coming whatsoever from a guy like James Paxton. So now they go back to Houston, and they'll play tomorrow night. By the way, we'll have that game for you right here on WEI, and then maybe force a Game 7. Now, from a pure viewing standpoint, I hope we get a Game 7 in this series. That would be awesome if we actually get a Game 7, because quite frankly, the baseball playoffs have not been great this year. You had the Washington Nationals absolutely beat down on the Cardinals. The Cardinals were a complete embarrassment. And we saw, okay, the Rays and the Astros got to a Game 5, but the Game 5 sucked. It was over very quickly. The Yankees made easy work of the Twins. If we could get a 7-game series, that would be incredibly entertaining. That would be awesome if that actually happened in this series. Anyway, I wanted to get to the theory that I have on Bill Belichick. So, earlier on this week, naturally, he's asked a lot of questions about the Jets as they're getting ready for Monday Night Football. And he was talking about Adam Gase. He said, Adam's one of, as I've talked about, I think one of the best game planners in the NFL and does an excellent job of attacking defenses and just making it tough to handle what they do offensively with their different personnel groups and plays and his play calling. So basically praising, waxing poetically about Adam Gase's ability to call games and his offensive acumen, so to speak, all that different type of stuff. Just applauding and giving Adam Gase all the credit in the world for what he's been able to do. And I start to think about this. So just a little background on Adam Gase. If you missed this article, it came out earlier in the summer. The Athletic's Dan Pompey profiled Adam Gase. So how about this factoid about Adam Gase? He left his wife right after she had a C-section. His son Wyatt was born. And right after that, the dude bounced. His wife Jennifer was quoted in the Athletic story. She said this, "They didn't even put my organs back in and sew me up before he's like, you good? All right, then I'm out." Because he wanted to go back in game plan with Peyton Manning. His wife also talks about the fact that he only gets 2 hours of sleep. She said he drinks 5 to 6 20-ounce cups a day from a Keurig coffee maker, then he'll mix in a Red Bull. He had smelling salts before a game in the preseason, remember, to get up. So you look at this and you think about it. All right, so Bill Belichick's praising this guy that is essentially crazy, right? The guy's sleeping for 2 hours a night. That can't be functional. And by the way, I don't believe that story whatsoever, that he and his wife say he sleeps 2 hours a night. How can the guy be living? It'd be one thing if you do that once or twice a week. You cannot possibly sleep 2 hours a night and still be alive. So I don't believe that to begin with. But nonetheless, getting back to the original point, I start to think about this. Bill Belichick has a 5-2 record against Adam Gase. He's only lost twice, and those two losses, one of them was that crazy game where, remember Gronk was out at the end of the game and Kenyon Drake last year? The Miami Miracle had that run at the end of the game where Gronk looked awful trying to make a tackle. That was one of the wins. So really, the Patriots shouldn't have lost that game. So, and by the way, the Patriots obviously beat the Jets earlier this season, so that's why he's 5-2 against Adam Gase. So I start to think about this Jets organization and start to think about Bill Belichick's relationship with the Jets. Belichick, who does he hate more than any team in the NFL? The New York Jets. So you think about what the Jets have done over the past couple of months. They actually did something smart. They hired Joe Douglas, who is an executive now, who is their GM. But before that, he was the director of pro personnel for the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are one of the best franchises in the NFL. The way that they've built up that roster, now I understand at this particular point in time, they're lacking in terms of cornerbacks. But overall, that's a really talented Eagles roster right now. And he was part of the drafting process, part of some of the trades. So Joe Douglas is a very good executive. And the Jets just hired him. And for years, the Jets have been the definition of dysfunctional. And they may have found somebody that can help build this roster up. Mike Maccagnan, not very good at his job, and he was shown his walking papers. But if you think about Bill Belichick, maybe this is Bill Belichick trying to screw up with the Jets, or trying to screw with the Jets, rather, because he's going out of his way to praise Adam Gase, who, by the way, has an under 500 record as a coach. And oh, by the way, Belichick's 5-2 against that guy. And oh, by the way, Adam Gase is psychotic. Sleeps 2 hours a night. The guy apparently left his wife, not apparently, he did, left his wife right after she had a C-section. And oh, by the way, this is a guy that doesn't get along with people that work above him. Him and Mike Maccagnan, the former GM of the team, who hired him, they didn't get along. Okay, he never wanted C.J. Mosley and Le'Veon Bell. He made that abundantly clear, right? Like, within the organization, and then the reports leaked out, and earlier on this season, Adam Gase had to defend himself. So I look at it like this. I don't believe Bill Belichick believes what he's saying about Adam Gase. I know he praises every opponent, every coaching staff, and all that. I remember years ago when the Colts didn't have Peyton Manning, and he was talking about, somebody said, how do you get your team ready for a game like this? And he referenced how great Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis were, right? Like, he got insulted by that type of question, right? It was years ago. It was the year that Peyton Manning was out with the neck injury. But nonetheless, could this be Bill Belichick? And here's my theory. Okay, so put your tinfoil hat on. Here's my theory. Bill Belichick wants to mess with the Jets, because here's the thing. They just hired a good executive in Joe Douglas. They have a psychotic coach that isn't good in Adam Gase. Okay, his record tells you he's not good. The guy's overrated. He's got issues. He doesn't sleep. He's taking smelling salts before games as if he's a player, right? Drinking 6 cups of coffee a day, sleeping 2 hours a night, leaving his wife when she has a C-section. Bill Belichick can't think this guy's stable. He's going to be in trouble long-term, Adam Gase. I mean, if he continues to live this way, it's not going to work out. So Belichick sees that they got a smart guy in there in Joe Douglas. He knows that Adam Gase is psychotic, so now he creates a little bit of controversy, right? So how about this? You think about it from this angle. Bill Belichick's putting it out there how great Adam Gase is. So you got Chris Johnson, the CEO of the team, who's basically running the team. Woody Johnson is, like, working for the government now. I believe he's an ambassador somewhere, the owner of the Jets, right? So if Bill Belichick, the greatest coach in the history of the sport, is praising your coach, how could Woody Johnson and Chris Johnson move on from the guy, even if Joe Douglas, who is the GM they brought in to run the team, and that was a smart move for the Jets, shockingly smart move for the Jets. So Joe Douglas probably wants to get his own coach in there, and the ownership group's going to say, no, we want to keep this guy. Belichick thinks he's really good. Joe Douglas is like, yeah, I'd like to get somebody off the Doug Peterson coaching tree. So from my perspective, this is just Bill Belichick toying with the Jets. Oh, this is a great coach. You better keep this guy. This is an unbelievable game planner and all this different type of stuff. Belichick's 5-2 against the guy. You think Belichick really thinks he's one of the better minds in the NFL? No, Bill's just like, all right, I beat his ass when he was in Miami. I was 4-2 against him there. So just keep him in the division so I can keep beating up on these inferior coaches. That's my theory. Is Belichick wants to mess with the Jets more, that's why he's going out of his way to praise a guy like Adam Gase. All right, a lot more to get into, including this Jaylen Brown situation for the Celtics. This contract negotiation not going exactly well for Jaylen Brown. The number is 617-779-7937 if you want to hop on board here. We'll get you trending in just a second.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, Brian Barrett with you for the next half hour or so. The number is 617-779-7937. Let's get to Sean. He's in Idaho tonight. Sean, what's going on, man?
Hello, yeah, and good evening. Yeah, thanks for taking my call this evening. I just want you to know and everybody else to know not to panic at all about the fact that the Astros lost tonight's game. You know, I guess we could all say the Yankees were probably due to win a game. The Astros totally have the advantage to win tomorrow night. I mean, A.J. Hinch has done a great job of managing that bullpen, Brian, and I can tell you, the Astros know that, you know, they got the home field now. They did exactly what they had to do to take two out of three. So I say the Astros end it tomorrow. I know it's supposed to be a bullpen game, but you got Garrett Cole for game seven. I mean, Houston's all right, and I'm sure you would agree with that too, real quickly.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Sean. The one thing that I would say about the Yankees, if they lose this series, it isn't going to be because they lose specifically tomorrow night's game. They're going to be kicking themselves for games earlier on in the series. Game two, for example, against Verlander. It's 2-2. They get to pull Verlander in the seventh inning. That's a game, if you're the Yankees, you have got to win that with your bullpen going up against their bullpen, and your lineup's going to show up. And the other thing, Sean, I would say is last night's game, they left way too many guys in scoring position. It wasn't the Yankees pitching, and I get the Yankees pitching was not great last night, but the difference in that game last night is the Astros hit with runners in scoring position, and the Yankees didn't.
Well, you know, Brian, you know, it's a good point that you bring this up, too, because, look, tonight the Yankees could have easily blown the game. I mean, Houston could have really had a chance to win this game tonight because they did have men on. But you know what? Mm-hmm. The Astros did exactly what they had to do.
I agree with that.
I'm sure I'm sure Yankee fans really felt, and I can't stand them at all. And I got to also tell the producer this, too. Look, Yankee fans, you should be ashamed of yourselves for the way you acted of late. I mean, you throw objects at Josh Reddick. You go out and taunt Zach Greinke for having a disability. That is horrible. I have to say this, too, and you all can agree with me or disagree with me. Yankee fans are by far the worst fan base in the history of professional sports. How dare you do that? That's bullying. That is bullying, okay, because that's awful. And speaking of
what about the Raptors, Sean? Sean, hold on. What about the Raptors? Yeah. Remember the Raptors fans were cheering when Kevin Durant tore his Achilles?
And that was awful, too. I mean, look, that's bullying. I mean, we got a lot of bad bullying going on these days. And I also have to say this to you, too, Brian, and everybody else. Happy 15th anniversary. I'm sure you're talking about it. 15 years ago, the Boston Red Sox made the greatest comeback in sports history. And I'm telling you, the memories don't go away. They don't ever go away. Because
the idiots, right, Sean?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like we'll always remember where we were when the moon landing happened, or when JFK was assassinated, which was so sad. We'll always remember what happened when Watergate happened. This was, but of course, this
Sean, how
was
old are you, man?
Arguably,
you sound younger than that.
Buddy, I'm 32. I'll be 33 in March.
Okay. And so, I mean, again, you don't remember moon landing.
No. But I've studied it so much and how big it was and how big it was half century ago. But you know what? The Red Sox winning that World Series 15 years ago, that was like my moon landing because you were so happy. I mean, we were so happy that we finally did it because, you know, we knew the time was coming. And the best part was to beat the Yankees from an 0-3 deficit. And, you know, 15 years ago tomorrow, Curt Schilling and the bloody sock is something you'll never forget. And, of course, game seven, just so many memories and stuff, too, that we can all remember where we were. And, of course, I was living in Wyoming at the time. So happy and so thrilled like we all were because we were ready for it. It was our time to win, and we were not as Red Sox fans, going to allow the Yankee fans to brag it in our face anymore. And the Red Sox were not going to allow the Yankees to beat them anymore because they were sick and tired of losing to them, just like I was and every other Red Sox fan as well.
Appreciate the phone call, Sean. Yeah, everybody remembers that day. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, but now the Red Sox are in a bad position. Economically, they're in a bad position because they want to shed some salary, and they have all these bad contracts, and they don't know who's running the organization going forward. So they're in a very bad spot. It feels weird that they won a World Series a year ago. They won a World Series a year ago, and this is where they're at. This organization handles prosperity really, really poorly. I mean, you go back to the 2013 World Series, and look, that team completely overachieved. Nobody expected it that year. Last year, the team was loaded. That year, 2013, nobody expected it. But the way that they came back in 2014, and they were horrible, for whatever reason, this organization cannot handle prosperity. Let's get to Steve in Billerica. Steve, what's going on, man?
Brian, what's happening? You know, you were just saying that about Dombrowski, and that's funny, because now how tough it is to win a World Series and then get fired before next season even over. I mean, that's awful. But anyway, that's not really what I want to call for. I'm talking about the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, the Patriots, the people are talking Patriots. Yeah, I mean, they're good. I mean, they have a chance. But I don't think they're like a lock, like people say they are.
It's
almost annoying. Yeah, it is annoying. You know, it's like this year is a perfect example of basically how like the last 15 years went. They have basically an average team, maybe a little above average, but it's
I wouldn't say that, Steve. I mean, you look at the defensive personnel. The defense is loaded. They have much better than an average team. Now, their offense right now has been barely above average. The offense is the concern, but I can't say they have an average football team when you have the greatest quarterback to ever live. Right now, you have the best cornerback in the NFL. Exactly. Jamie Collins is playing remarkable. They're not an average team.
Brian, yeah, let me finish. Yeah, what it is when you have the basic, well, let's just say an average team, right? Then you have a quarterback that's above and beyond that basically plays a great game. He runs the show. When you have great quarterback play, you win games on the field in the NFL.
Yeah.
But as far as being a lock to win the Super Bowl or even go to the Super Bowl, it's you really can't say that. And with the defense is playing great, no doubt about it. But how can you measure it against, you know, who they played so far?
No, that's a fair point, Steve. That's a fair point. And the other thing I would pose to you, I mean, you look at it right now, and Mutt brought up this point on a show earlier today. I didn't even think about it. But think about it from this perspective. You realize that, look, the defense has been great, but we would all agree they haven't played a great offense. You realize that Sam Darnold coming up on Monday Night Football in his second year, that will be the best quarterback the Patriots have played so far this season because Roethlisberger was dealing with that elbow injury in week 1. He wasn't the same Big Ben. So the Patriots, from a defensive perspective, they haven't played a real quarterback yet. And even Darnold, the guy's in year 2.
Right, exactly. And the Jets, I tell you right now, it's going to be a tough game, number 1. And the next 9 games, well, before the last game.
Yeah, the schedule gets tougher now, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm telling you right now, it could be a 5-4. They could lose 4 of the next 9 games. You just never know. And I'm telling you, it's not a lock for people to think that it's basically the same team as last year coming back.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part, Steve, and I appreciate the phone call. His line's open at 617-779-7937. I agree with you for the most part that this team really, up until this particular point in time, has not played the premier competition, if you will. But I don't have any doubts about the defense. The defense right now, I look at the personnel. Remember, this isn't just what happened over the past 6 weeks. This defense was building up to this last year. If you remember how they played in the postseason, the defense against the Chiefs, they shut them down for the first half. Look what they did to Jared Goff and the Rams in the Super Bowl. Remember, that was a team that was leading the NFC in scoring last year, and they came in and the Patriots shut them down and held them to 3 points in the Super Bowl. So from a defensive perspective, I don't have any questions about this team at all. I believe that this team is going to be an elite group from a defensive perspective all season long. And if you look at the personnel, they have so many guys. They have so many guys from a depth perspective, and the bringing back of Jamie Collins is something that was completely underrated to me. I believed that Jamie Collins was going to be a contributor to this team, but the way that he's contributed this year, he's getting after the quarterback, he's defending well in the pass game. I mean, Jamie Collins' emergence on this team has been downright remarkable. I mean, he's the key element that you didn't have a season ago. Now, we all know what you have with McCourty on the back end, both McCourtys, I should say. You know what you have with Gilmore. You can bring in J.C. Jackson, Jonathan Jones, all these guys. I mean, they have a very deep secondary, and from a linebacking position standpoint. These guys have been remarkable, not to mention the fact you got a rookie in Chase Winovich who's making plays. And look, he's been the beneficiary of the rest of the pass rushers and the linebackers getting some extra sacks, but hey, I'll take it right now. So I don't have any questions about the defense whatsoever. This defensive group has proven enough to me. Now I understand you can say, oh, they haven't played any quarterbacks. Fine. I trust the defensive personnel. With the offense right now, that's the amazing thing. We're trying to figure out how can you generate enough offense to become the Death Star that you've been over the past 20 years. We've been saying for years, like, remember when the Patriots defense sucked in the middle portion, really from like 2009-ish to 2013-ish, and then it started to get better when you brought in Revis in 14. But there was that small period, the four-year period, where the Patriots defense wasn't good, and we were saying, if the defense can just be average, this team's got to be unbeatable. Well, now we're looking at the Patriots offense. Can you just do one thing well? Can you either become a really good passing team, which I don't think they have the personnel to do it, or can you become a really good running team? That's the question right now. Can they build an identity over the rest of the season? Because right now, this Patriots offense has no identity whatsoever, and that's the issue I see with this team going forward. Let's get to Doug. He's in Hyde Park. What's up, Doug?
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just wanted to make 2 points. One, I'm a Yankee fan who lives in Boston. But I just, one of your previous callers just said that we were the worst fans.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, what was happening, what they did was despicable, throwing stuff on there. But that's a few fans, bad apples. I remember a few years ago when Red Sox fans, some despicable Red Sox fans were calling Adam Jones the N-word.
Well, I mean, look. Look, Doug, hey, look, that was, I mean, that's something that Adam Jones did say. I understand your point. There's bad apples everywhere. I mean, look, we see this happen all the time in sports. Certain fan bases go over the top. We saw it with the Toronto Raptors. Like, they were cheering when Kevin Durant went down with a gruesome injury. So we see it all the time. I don't look at the Yankees as, like, a fan base that they're an awful group. You had a couple of bad people at the game in terms of the actions. They're not defensible. But that's a couple of fans. Overall, I believe, personally, the Yankees right now, that stadium, and I never thought you'd have a stadium like the old Yankee Stadium, but that's the best atmosphere in baseball right now. That place is an absolute hornet's nest. So, yeah, a couple of bad people acted like jerks the other night, but I don't put that on the totality of the fan base. It doesn't make me think that the Yankees fans are bad or anything along those lines.
Well, I appreciate that. My other point, quick question is about David Price. I'm actually a David Price fan. Obviously, a lot of Red Sox fans don't like him. What do you think they should do with him, given his contract?
If they could eat some of it and trade him, I would do it in a second. I mean, he's a bad influence on the clubhouse right now. We've seen he's been an issue. The whole Dennis Eckersley thing blew up again this year. If you can get somebody to take that contract, just get him out of here, I would do it in a heartbeat if I was the Red Sox. I really would. Does anybody think David Price is going to get better next year? He had his worst season from a statistical perspective since his second year in Major League Baseball, and that was his first full year as a starter. Because remember, he came up in 08, and he came out of the bullpen. He beat the Red Sox in the American League Championship Series. He didn't beat them, but he came out of the bullpen. Remember, at that time, he was the power pitcher throwing 98 miles an hour. And that was his second year was 09. This ERA that he had this year, the worst since 2009. His body's breaking down. Every year that he's been with the Red Sox, there's been something in terms of the injury. So he's not going to get any better than he is right now. Not to mention the fact, when you look at David Price, he's been a bad influence on the clubhouse. He's got all these issues with Dennis Eckersley. He brought it on himself again this year. And if you look at David Price, if you can get rid of that guy, get him out of the clubhouse, eat some of the contract, get rid of the rest of the contract, I'm good with it. I don't want to see David Price play for the Red Sox anymore. You got your one nice run with the guy. Your one nice run. You're not going to get another run with that guy. And not to mention the fact, let's be honest, David Price never wanted to be here. He wanted to be with the St. Louis Cardinals, but the Red Sox offered him more money, and he wasn't going to turn that down because the Players Association wasn't going to let it happen. He never wanted to be here. Never. Never wanted to be here. Okay, a lot more to get into. The number is 617-779-7937. I will get to this Jaylen Brown contract situation next. This does not look good for Jaylen. And it doesn't look great for the Celtics right now either. We'll get to that next right here on WEI Late Night.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right. Let me tell you this. If you missed any of today's show, well, you're in luck. Remember, you can listen to the entire program on the Radio.com app using the new Rewind feature. If you still don't have the app, just text APP to 37937. That is 37937. All right, so Jaylen Brown looking for a new contract extension. Here's what he had to say at Celtics Media Day with that.
We just signed an extension. This is a team that historically hasn't given out a lot of those. What's your mindset going into that?
To be honest, I'm not putting too much thought into it. I'm not losing any sleep over it. I think stuff like that end up working itself out in the end or however so. So I'm just focused on the season and playing basketball. I think that's my number one emphasis, and let the chips fall where they may.
All right, so that was Jaylen Brown at Media Day. By the way, Brian Barrett with you to the top of the hour. The number is 617-779-7937. And now we're getting closer to the extension deadline for Jaylen Brown. For him to get a new deal with the Celtics, it has to be done by Monday, or next year he'll become a restricted free agent. So Chris Haynes from Yahoo Sports reported earlier this week that the Celtics made a four-year, $80 million offer to Jaylen Brown. Haynes wrote that Brown believes in his ability to one day be a star and is pursuing a bigger offer. Danny Ainge denied the report. And it should be noted, by the way, if you're doubting Chris Haynes' reporting and all this, that they offered him a four-year, $80 million deal. Remember, Haynes is the same guy that reported that Gordon Hayward was going to sign with the Celtics before his Players Tribune article came out. Everybody was killing Chris Haynes at the time, and it turned out he was 100% right. So this guy's a dialed-in NBA reporter. So then Danny Ainge was at the Celtic Shamrock Foundation Gala. He had this to say: I don't want to talk about negotiations. You guys know how much we love Jaylen, and we'll see what happens. He went on to say, we're trying to build a championship team, and there is a lot that goes into it. And part of that is managing a payroll. And for a player, I've been on that side, too. It's basically all about you. It's your world, and you're comparing yourself to others, and it's a complicated process in some years. So he said, it's a complicated process in some years, and he said, we're trying to build a championship team. Translation, Jaylen wants a lot more than we're willing to give him right now. That's the reality of the situation. Jaylen told the New York Times, Mark Stein, everybody says they're not concerned with it, but in some way, shape, or form, they are. But to be honest, it really is not overwhelming me or my thoughts. I know what type of talent I have, and I'm confident in myself. Okay, so if you look at Jaylen from his draft class, Jamal Murray, 5 years, $170 million. Ben Simmons, 5 years for $170 million. So if you're Jaylen Brown, and I'm not saying the Celtics should have offered him the max. They definitely should not have offered him a max contract. But if you're Jaylen Brown, if that's the offer, even though Danny Ainge denied it, if that's legitimately the offer the Celtics offered him, 4 years for $80 million, so that's $13 million less per season than these guys from your draft class, and it's one less season. So if you're Jaylen Brown, you're certainly going to bet on yourself. Unless you're getting something that's close to the max, if you're Jaylen Brown, you're not signing anything that Danny Ainge puts in front of you, because here's the reality of the situation. The free agency class that's coming up next year is absolutely atrocious. So here are like the big-name free agents. Anthony Davis, but he's not really a free agent, right? Because Anthony Davis is going to re-up with the Lakers. So that's not even really worth bringing up. Here are the big-name free agents. DeMar DeRozan, not very good. Overrated player. Andre Drummond, can't shoot. He's terrible in terms of free throws. This guy has been a liability at the free throw line. They got to take him out of close games. Danilo Gallinari on the other side of 30. Eric Gordon on the other side of 30, right? So you look at all these guys, and actually Gordon's off the list now because he just signed an extension. So the point being, the unrestricted free agent class is not good. It's not like last year we had Kyrie and Durant and Klay Thompson. All these guys were free agents. That's not the case next year. The best free agents are going to be the restricted guys. So if you're Jaylen Brown, one of these teams will sign you to a massive offer sheet, and I would bet that it's going to be the Atlanta Hawks, who have $90 million in salary cap space next year. They're trying to build around a young team with Trae Young. You get a defender like Jaylen Brown in there, that would be the perfect fit for Jaylen Brown, and it'd be a perfect move for the Atlanta Hawks that need to bring a strong defense around a guy like Trae Young that's going to be a liability on the defensive side of the basketball court. Now, here's the thing that I worry about from a Celtics perspective. I understand what Danny Ainge is doing. He's treating Jaylen Brown more of an asset than like a building block going forward. Because like when Jason Tatum comes up next year, you know they're maxing him out, right? He's the face of the franchise going forward. They're maxing him out. So he's looking at Jaylen Brown still more of an asset as like a foundational piece. That's how I read the situation, right? And I agree with Danny Ainge and the Celtics brass for not giving him a max contract. Quite frankly, he does not deserve it. But here's why I think they're treating him like an asset, because of the offer they're putting on the table, and they're not willing to go overboard here, right? Because even Jamal Murray, this guy doesn't deserve a max, but the Nuggets are telling Jamal Murray, hey, you're part of the future. You're part of the future. Have you seen Jamal Murray play? That guy's a yo-yo. One game he's good, one game he's bad, not consistent whatsoever, but the Nuggets are saying, you're one of our building blocks going forward. The Celtics, essentially, by not offering Jalen the max, and like I said, I agree with Danny Ainge not offering him that, they're looking at him as an asset. They're saying, hey, what can we give Jaylen Brown that still looks like an appealing contract for if we want to trade him in the future? That's how the Celtics are looking at this thing, and that's how the Celtics are letting this thing play out. But the one thing that I would say, if Jaylen Brown, which in all likelihood he's not going to come to an agreement with Danny Ainge and company over the next couple days, they're not going to get a deal done by Monday. That would be my prediction. That's how I'm reading this situation. So I'm wondering if this is going to become a problem for the Celtics, right? And in particular, if Jalen's going to be irritated by this, because Jalen knows, all right, if I don't get a contract done by Monday, I'm betting on myself, and I want to set myself up to get a huge contract in the summer. So if Jalen is used in a similar fashion to the way he was used a year ago, and I get everybody can say, well, hey, Kyrie's not here. It's going to be fine. But think about this. There is a really easy scenario to picture where Jaylen Brown becomes the fourth option on this team and maybe even the fifth option, because we know that Tatum and Kemba Walker are going to be the main two guys in terms of, if you look at usage rate, those are the guys that are going to get the most shots and have the ball in their hand the most. And then isn't it really easy to see Gordon Hayward jumping in front of Jaylen Brown in the food chain? All we hear about Gordon Hayward is that he's got his athleticism back and all that different type of great stuff for the Celtics. And he's a facilitator more so than Jalen is. Jalen's a play finisher. Hayward's the second best ball handler on the team and can set people up. So Hayward could move into that third spot in terms of the touches, so to speak. And then if Cantor has a really good year, this guy's a dynamic scorer from the center position. He can be a liability defensively, but he's a really good offensive player. So you could easily see Jalen knocking down to fourth or fifth on the food chain. If you're Jaylen Brown and you're trying to get a contract extension from, if the Celtics don't give it to you, you may be looking to get it from a different organization. That could be a real problem for Brad Stevens in terms of managing all the egos again. This whole contract situation with Jaylen Brown, not a pretty picture for the Celtics heading into the season to have this hanging over your head. And if you're Jaylen Brown, you want to prove you're worth a max contract so he could easily get aggravated with his current situation. Thanks to Max and Ben for producing tonight. I'll be back tomorrow from 5 to 7. Head of 8. Great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.